For those of you who have not been with us before, and as I say, it's obvious we've got a lot of visitors with us. We've been in a study of the wisdom literature, and we're in Proverbs, so you can open your Bibles there, and we're really just covering verse by verse the first nine chapters, because the first nine chapters are not really Proverbs per se, but the first nine chapters are really a discussion that wisdom is superior to folly. And we started out with the first few verses where the writer tells us why he's going to discuss these things, so that people could have good guidance, so that people could have instruction. And then immediately after that introduction, he says, "My son, listen to the words of your father and to the words of your mother." And then in the rest of the book, much of the focus is being given to young people. And the obvious point is that the kind of wisdom that he is discussing is something that many will attain just by experience. Because we're not just talking about religious wisdom. We're talking about the kind of wisdom that gives guidance to life here. When we complete this, we're planning on Sunday to start a study in the book of Ecclesiastes. And the book of Ecclesiastes repeatedly uses the expression, life under the sun. And the emphasis of the wisdom literature is to give guidance and counsel to people for life here on earth, not simply how to go to heaven. I have to say it every time. The most important thing of all is going to heaven. And if you don't make heaven, then you haven't been wise, certainly. But the wisdom that we're talking about is guidance for life here on earth. Why do you think he would focus on the young people? The answer is too obvious. They haven't had the experience. So they're referred to as the simple, the naive. They haven't been down the road far enough yet to learn a lot of these things from the University of Hard Knocks, some people call it, where you find out by the mistakes you make. Interesting, in these nine chapters, six of the chapters begin with this expression, "My son, my son, my son." So the obvious application of the material is certainly suited for the young people. But the writer says that it's good for everybody, because to the wise man it gives further understanding and further application. Now, we've looked at several passages. I'm spending too much time on this. We've looked at several passages that emphasize the grandeur of wisdom. And then we started looking at the parts where the writer makes some application for the young fella or for all people. We've looked at two of those applications. In the first chapter, he talked about warning about listening to people when they say, "Come on, join our gang. We're going to lie in wait, and we will accost the person when he comes by. We'll take his purse, and we'll all share it together." And the writer says, don't listen to that. And the whole point is, those that live by violence are going to die by violence. And he said they don't know that they're laying a trap for their own blood. And then in four different places, and we looked at these on Sunday, in four different places, he warns against adultery. He warns against the young man being snared by the strange woman. Strange woman is anybody that is not his wife. He's going to say that the marital union and sex within the marital union is a beautiful thing, and God approves, and that's wonderful. But he says, drink water out of your own cistern. Why should your strength be spread abroad in the street? Don't go to the strange woman. And then in chapter 7, we looked at that story where wisdom is seated in a upstairs room looking down and sees this young man come along and is snared by a prostitute and taken by her to her home with her lying to him, telling him that her husband is away and all of that. And she takes him home. And he doesn't realize that he's going to his own doom. Now, we've looked at a warning about gangs and greed. We've looked at a warning about improper sexual relationships. What other things would you expect God to warn young people about? We're going to look at some that God includes in these nine chapters. But I want to hear what do you think he would warn about? Anybody got any ideas? What?
No. He would warn about fornication.
We've already covered that one, yeah. What else?
Adultery.
What else? Those are covered. That's what we had already discussed. All right. What are the other things? Charlie? Selfishness and pride. Anybody got another one? Surely somebody does. Laziness. Give me another one. No, we're going to get to folly, but folly is the contrast with wisdom. What other? Bad influences of other people? Well, that's really in that first part. Turn to chapter 6. Turn to chapter 6. He's used the point of the strange woman and of greedy for gain. Look in chapter... Well, first, look at chapter 4. I'm skipping one. Look at chapter 4. Verses 24 and 25. Put away from thee a wayward mouth, and perverse lips put far from thee. Let thine eyes look right on, and let thine eyelids look straight before thee. You know what that's really saying? It's close to what Charlie was talking about. It's really talking about honesty. Being straight dealer, looking straight ahead, doing the things that are honorable. Now drop down to chapter 6. In chapter 6, look at the first 5 verses. My son, if thou art become surety for thy neighbor, if you have stricken your hands for a stranger, thou art snared with the words of thy mouth. Thou art taken with the words of thy mouth. Do this now, my son, and deliver thyself. Seeing that thou art come into the hand of thy neighbor, go, humble thyself. Importune thy neighbor. Give not sleep to thine eyes, nor slumber to thine. Deliver thyself from the roe of the hand of the hunter, as a bird from the hand of the fowler. Can anybody summarize what he's warning about there? Look at verse 1. If you have become surety for your neighbor, don't lend anybody any money. No. That.
Surety is putting your name.
Louder.
Surety is putting your name, your reputation at risk for someone else.
You've made a guarantee to somebody. He's saying, be careful. Don't let your mouth bite up more than you can deliver. And if you promise somebody that you're going to do something for them or take care of a matter for them, what are you obligated to do? Do what you've been obligated to. So he's saying, young people, be careful. Don't commit yourself to things that you're not able to deliver on or that would make it difficult in your life. Don't get committed on something unwisely. It doesn't mean that you never promise anything. It doesn't mean that you never do something for a neighbor. But he's saying be careful about it. And if you do make that promise, live up to it. Go to your neighbor and say to him, hey, you know, make it right with him. Don't just ignore it. Don't just fail. Live up to it. Look at verses 6 through 11. And I think Paul was on this one. Go to the ant, thou sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise. Having no chief, overseer, or ruler, she provides her bread in the summer and gathers her food in the harvest. How long will you sleep, O sluggard? When will you arise out of thy sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. So shall thy poverty come as a robber and thy want as an armed man. What's that a warning about? Laziness, sloth, not putting your hand to the plow, not doing your work. And look at the example. Go to the ant. We could spend some time talking about the ant world. But the marvelous thing about ants is every one of them, without any kind of leader, without any director, no captain of the ants standing on the side telling them what to do, every one of them is busy. And there is a built-in commitment to do whatever is best for the group. I've seen some of these nature things on TV of ants bundling into a ball and in the water. And when one ant gets about to drown, he comes up for the other. And the others just join right in. And a number of them do drown. But they do what needs to be done, and nobody has to tell them. That's a recommendation to be a worker. Oh, there are lots of things we could make applications on that. Look at verses 12 to 15. A worthless person, a man of iniquity, is he that walketh with a perverse mouth, that winketh with his eyes, that speaketh with his feet, that maketh signs with his fingers, in whose heart is perverseness, who deviseth evil continually, who soweth discord. Therefore shall his calamity come suddenly. On a sudden shall he be broken, and that without remedy. That's a warning about somebody who is dishonest, untrustworthy. Be careful of somebody. And I don't know what all the figures meant to the people at that day. That here's a man that winketh with his eyes. Well, is it a sin to wink? Of course not. But he's talking about somebody, he's crafty. Or makes signs with his fingers, or moves his feet and shuffles his feet. He's unstable. He's unreliable, untrustworthy. In all of these, God is giving a warning. And then a familiar passage, I think. Look at verse 16. There are six things which Jehovah hateth, yea, seven which are an abomination unto him. Wait a minute. I've heard some people who are cynics look at this passage and say, see, the Bible has mistakes. It said there are six things that God hates. Now, then it turns around and said, no, there are seven. If the Bible's always right, why didn't he start with seven? Anybody got an answer for that? What is seven always used for in Scripture? A complete number or the perfect number. And what the writer is saying is there's a list of things that God really hates. Six of them that He hates. No, seven that are an abomination to Him. Here's a good list. Read it. Haughty eyes. Lying tongue. Hands that shed innocent blood. A heart that deviseth wicked purposes. Feet that are swift in running to mischief. And a false witness that uttereth lies. And he that soweth discord among brethren. Now, we can preach sermons on each one of those. But here's just a list of things. Put all of those in context. What's the writer doing? What's God doing for us here? He's making an application about wisdom and folly. That wisdom is the right way to go. Turn to chapter 8. In chapter 1, we read a lengthy tribute to wisdom. How wonderful wisdom is. Listen to chapter 8. The writer's coming to an end of this introductory matter. Listen to chapter 8. Doth not wisdom cry, and understanding put forth her voice? On the top of the high places, remember chapter 1 said, stands at the street corner, and on the high places, where the paths meet, she standeth. Beside the gates at the entry of the city, at the coming of the door, she cries aloud, unto you, O men, I call, and my voice is to the sons of men. O ye simple, hear those naive ones, understand prudence. And you fools, be of understanding heart. Hear, for I will speak excellent things, and the opening of my lips shall be right things. For my mouth shall utter truth, and wickedness is an abomination to my lips. And all the words of my mouth are in righteousness. There is nothing crooked or perverse in them. They are all plain to him that understands, and right to them that find knowledge. Receive my instruction, and not silver. For wisdom is better than rubies, and all things that may be desired are not to be compared to it. That same theme goes on through chapter 8. I'm not going to read all of it. It's a beautiful section. But turn to chapter 9. And the writer is going to draw the conclusion. We're going to make the application. And what he's been trying to say in these 9 chapters is that there are 2 paths in life. Wise ones and foolish ones. Follow the way of wisdom. And I've summarized too much tonight. I know that. But he's drawn the picture that wisdom is here crying aloud and urging people to come to her. And folly takes you down the path of destruction. I love figurative language. And I like it when a speaker paints a picture with words, or when God does and gives you an image. Maybe it doesn't fill in every detail, but you see the picture. Look at chapter 9. Wisdom hath builded her house. This is a conclusion. Wisdom has builded her house. She has hewn out her 7 pillars. We looked at 7 different topics that are emphasized in this passage as wisdom. She hath killed her beast. She hath mingled her wine. She hath also furnished her table. She hath set forth her maidens. She crieth upon the highest places of the city. What's she saying? Verse 4. Whoso is simple, let him turn in hither. As for him that is void of understanding, she says to him, come, eat of my bread, drink of the wine which I have mingled. Leave off, you simple ones, and live, and walk in the ways of understanding. You know what that picture is? Wisdom has built a house. And wisdom is standing at the entrance to that house, inviting people in. I don't know what image comes to your mind. Maybe it's because of where I was born, but to me, it's a southern mansion with the beautiful pillars. And a gracious lady, older, still beautiful, still very vibrant, and she stands at the door of that house. And she calls to the people as they come by and says, come in. And to those who come in, what are they going to find? She says, I have spread my table. I've killed the beast. I've mingled the wine. What's going to happen to all of us tomorrow? Maybe it happened today for a lot of folks. What's going to happen to a bunch of us tomorrow? What kind of a meal are we going to have? Most of us are not going to McDonald's tomorrow at noon. And I like to picture this lady inviting people in, and when they come in, she has that spread that we usually think of at Thanksgiving and Christmas and all that. Just a beautiful table, beautifully set, and welcome to eat all you will. Earlier we discussed verses 7 through 12 and made the application earlier. Drop down now to verse 13. The foolish woman is clamorous. She is simple. She's naive herself and knoweth nothing. And she sitteth at the door of her house. On a seat in the high place of the city. It's not just wisdom that talks to you from the high places. To call to them that pass by, who go right on in their ways. Whoso is simple, let him turn in hither. As for him that is void of understanding, she says to him, stolen waters are sweet, and bread eaten in secret is pleasant. But he knoweth not that the dead are there, and her guests are in the depths of Sheol. Two ladies standing at the doors to their homes and calling to people to invite them in. When you walk into the house of wisdom, the table is spread and it's sumptuous. You walk into the house of folly, and what is there? The dead are there. I saw a movie one time. On television years ago. Many years ago. And it was one of those weird movies, maybe not past the comment, one of those weird movies, and this deranged person had murdered people and had taken their bodies, dressed them, and they were dressed for Sunday go-to-meeting, at least, if not formal. And they were sitting at a table. And there were a half a dozen or so corpses, all dressed, sitting around that table. But it's death. That image came to my mind when I read this image of the foolish woman. And the woman here is like wisdom as pictured. It's a picture of folly as opposed to wisdom. And both of them invite mankind. Particularly, the young are susceptible to those invitations. And both of them stand at the door and say, come on in and enjoy it. She's going to say to him, stolen water is the very sweetest. When I was a kid growing up, a lot of people lived close enough in the country that and the folks raised watermelon. And I've often heard people say, no watermelon is ever as good as the one that you sneak into the field and steal. There's a lot of imagery there. Stolen waters are sweet. But the end of it is death. What's God saying to us? He's saying, I'm giving you good counsel. I'm giving you good advice. Follow wisdom. Don't be lazy. Go to the end. Don't give in to greed. Don't join that gang thinking you can get something for nothing. Don't follow the strange woman. Don't be a liar. Be honest in your dealing. And wisdom says the rewards to you will be sumptuous. The fleeting things of foolishness will trap most people. And the ends thereof are not very pretty. I've done all the talking. Thank you for listening so kindly. And what our game plan is for the rest of the quarter, we're going now to the book of Ecclesiastes and look at God's description for life under the sun and recommendation. It's one of the wisdom letters. And then we're going to follow that up with the Song of Solomon, which I think is God's recommendation for choosing a mate for life. And when I'm away, Steve is going to cover some of the Proverbs themselves, and we may spend some time on some of those. Thank you for listening. It's okay.